out there. Reinhard, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate your time.
Good evening. It's a pleasure.
We've been seeing footage and pictures of buildings burning, trees falling, gale force winds. Is it as dramatic as what we are seeing on our screens?
I think it was. But then again, just to be correct, we're on the other side of the Solaris Pass Mountain, and we started getting that same storm only last night and today. So fortunately, we didn't have the fires that was done on that side, but we got the rain today and last night.
What sort of casualties are we looking at this stage?
At this stage, we came off lightly. Remember that it's not the same type of weather or time that we had in September. September, our rivers were full. We had a lot of flooding and so on. This time, there was capacity, so the rain could be absorbed. So at this stage, we're looking at roads being blocked and so on. And with water levels still rising and a prolonged the downpours that we're getting at the moment will cause further rising in the rivers tomorrow, more roads to be closed and so on.
I made a comment just at the beginning of the show to say that, you know, these sporadic acts of God, as it were, are asking us a very, very hard question. And the question is, are we prepared? Do we have the correct infrastructure to deal with some of the hardest moments that the weather can throw at us? Are we?
How long is a
piece of string question?
Yeah. And how long do you want to debate this?
Yeah.
So what is interesting is and I'm going to take us back to the September floods. And in certain areas, it was compared to the 1 in 100-year floods. And a lot of engineers will tell you they never prepare for that. Bridges and so on will be built to 1 in 50, because if you do the calculations, the 1 in 100 years, you should be lucky that your structure remains standing for 100 years. So in a lot of respect, it's not geared for that, number one. Number two, if you look at the wind factor and our informal settlements, obviously our informal settlements are not geared for it either.
Yeah.
So the more you go into it, the more you will probably find that, no, we're probably not prepared and that we are compensating for what we're experiencing. But then also that said, we are experiencing more of this than usual. In my career, I've had more of these storms in the last 10 years than in my all 30 years combined. So, you know, everything is changing.
That was the next question, because I'm interested to understand, we've basically answered the question, are we seeing more incidents of really bad weather, or is it because we're just not prepared for it? And we now have social media, and we now have all sorts of things that quickly broadcast the carnage. You're saying that there is most definitely, as far as you're concerned, a greater frequency of this kind of income. And that's why is that?
You asked me the question, is it this, that, and the other? And the answer is probably all of the above. But we definitely, I think the ice was broken with Nisna. When we had that big incident and we all responded there. And subsequent to that, we've had more and more and more of this. Yes, we are more aware of it with social media, and yes, it appears, and it's, I won't say blown up, that's the wrong term. But, you know, a car goes over a bridge at the Huguenot Tunnel, and we know about it immediately. Someone goes over an embankment, we know about it immediately. So yes, it is probably more dramatic. But the fact is that we are getting more and more of these incidents, and climate change is being blamed for it. It's as simple as that. And the scientists will tell you, and the weather gurus will tell you, we will have more. It will be shorter, but it will be more intense. Just in our area, in the last month, we've had thunderstorms like we were up in Gauteng.
Yeah.
So things are definitely changing.
Well, we definitely have been having some dramatic thunderstorms here in Gauteng and Johannesburg. My question is, are we monitoring all of these developments with the required urgency and mentality to try and put plans in place to make sure that we have the least amount of casualties?
I think we are, and obviously I can only speak for the Western Cape and what we're doing here with the Provincial Disaster Management Centre and then the district centres. You know, we're updating our risk quite regularly. We're closely involved with the University of Stellenbosch with their risk reduction department, monitoring this, seeing what's happening, and updating our risk. You know, someone made a comment this morning that, you know, this is definitely not our first rodeo, and we know this. So we are lucky in certain parts of our country, we are geared for it. In other parts of the country, we're definitely not geared for it. So it depends where you are and who you're asking. But as I said, in our area, specifically in the Western Cape, we've got a well-organized provincial disaster management center. We've got well-organized district disaster management centers. So we are probably better prepared than many others.
Tell me about what's happened in Cape Town. Which areas have been most affected by the recent developments weather-wise?
Okay, remember, as I said, I'm not responsible for Cape Town.
Okay.
So it's the Winelands area and the Helderberg area and then some of the coastal areas. But I wouldn't like to start commenting on their areas as I wasn't directly involved.
Okay. But based on what you're saying to me and the tone of the conversation, it's really not as bad as September.
No, it's not.
Regardless of what we're seeing on our TV screens and social media.
No, absolutely. So what happened was, you know, just to put a high level picture on it. So the wind that came before the system came with fires, which we didn't have in September. So the fires created havoc, the wind created havoc, and then obviously a fire in Fishhook in a built-up area with rainbows around it, it will create a problem, and I think there were 8 buildings involved. But they managed to cope. The difference is in September, it was more rain, and it was a rapid onset of rain, and we had massive damages in September, but we didn't have that wind amount. So compared to September, no, we're not getting close to it at this stage.
Yeah. What sort of training are we beginning to see? I mean, I had a conversation with somebody again last week around the fires and the issues that took place in some of the informal settlements around Cape Town in and around Cape Town where a couple of people were injured and some died. And we talked a little bit about perhaps some of the training that can take place for citizens, for members of the public, to help mitigate against some of the really, really bad effects of what can happen under these circumstances. Do we have anything of that nature in your area?
We do. We work with our local municipalities, deploy units, what we call shack attacks. It's almost a hand-drawn type fire, little fire engine, if I can call it that, training people on what to do and what not to do. And then they can deploy rapidly and kill the fire while the fire department is still on the way. But again, we need to realize if you have a fire in such a close built up environment, with 110 kilometer wind blowing, then all the training in the world is not going to make a difference.
Is that how fast those winds are blowing?
Yeah, we measured up to 150 kilometers an hour. So no, that's why I say, you know, in a felt fire, in a informal settlement fire, in that type of wind conditions, you're really up against a big one.
It's like a projectile, man. It's like a projectile. That wind. Anyway, and particularly in informal settlements. One of the issues that came out of the last conversation I had was accessibility, the size of the roads, the condition of the roads that allow emergency services to get to the informal settlements. Talk to me about your experience as far as that is concerned.
It is extremely difficult. I think I'm the first fire chief that ever brought in helicopters to fight a informal settlement fire. And that was many, many, many moons ago. We brought in an Oryx helicopter, and we actually flattened a few huts, but we managed to stop the fire from running in an informal settlement, because that is the problem that we're dealing with. So what we're trying to do with these shack attack units, it's small, mobile. They can get into it faster than we can with the big trucks. But that's where we need to, you know, you talk about training, but we also need to look at town planning, and we need to look at how these settlements are laid out and so on to make sure that there's access.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, you're right. But it's a problem. You know, in the end of the day, people build a hut over a hydrant and sells the water. So very innovative and entrepreneurship, but then we can't find the hydrant.
So it appears to me that all of the issues that are of a socio-economic nature that exacerbate the issues of runaway fires or anything of that nature is not just about human settlements. It's about all sorts of different other departments having to work together to try and provide a more lasting solution, it appears.
Yeah, you can take this very wide. I mean, if you look at some of the forestry areas that's been abandoned and land invasion onto the forestry. So you're talking about land invasion. You're talking about socioeconomic conditions leading or circumstances leading to land invasion, people needing place to stay. What do they do after this, after that? Burning areas for grazing for their cattle. That gets out of hand and burns down more than they anticipated.
Yeah.
And so we can carry on and on and on. So, I beg your pardon, in the end of the day, unfortunately, we're the ones that's got to go in at the end of the day and stop the fires and rescue the people from flood-prone areas where they built their huts and dwellings and so on. So in the end, the circle comes back to us. But there's a lot of departments, including ourselves, that needs to be take responsibility in and preventing that from happening.
Looks like this problem is only going to get more interesting as we go forward.
Absolutely.
What are the forecasts? I mean, just in terms of the weather and the gale force winds, I think is what you call them out in Cape Town, that are responsible for this kind of thing. You were speaking about some of the patterns that we are likely to see going forward. What are the forecasts in very broad terms, please, Reinhard?
Well, a short-term forecast for the system is that it's moving out in an easterly direction. So the garden route should be getting it tomorrow. I think there's a level 6 warning out for them, not as bad as this side, at level 6 and not a 9. So the George Nisner area, they will be getting some of the rain. The problem with the cut-off low is that it's very difficult to forecast. So the weather services are not going to tell us that we will be getting 4 or 6 or 8 cut-off lows this winter. So in actual fact, we were supposed to have a slightly drier period leading up to winter. So, you know, I think we've got some of the best weather guys in the country, in the Western Cape, very experienced. We trust them with their forecasts, but even they're struggling to get this right. So I think the seasonal forecast is for a drier winter, yet here we are, 150 mils of rain overnight. So who knows what's going to happen with these systems.
Is there a good story to tell about all of this?
I think the good story is, the very good story for me out of this whole thing is how people come together and how organizations work together, from Gift of the Givers, off-road rescue units, EMS, fire departments, disaster managers, right up through Department of Education, right up to the Premier. I think you will look very far and wide to find a more cohesive unit that can deal with this type of thing.
Can we use some of the water that's been part of the 110 liters of water, I mean millimeters of of water per what? What's the time unit there?
No, well, that's per 24 hours. Yeah.
Can we use it? Is it do we have the right catchment areas? Can this water be used?
Yes, a lot of the water is being used. A lot of it obviously flows into rivers and end up in the sea. But if I look at where we add a lot of our water, it's the main catchment areas like Tiwaterkloof Dam. And Tiwaterkloof Dam is one of the main feeders for the city of Cape Town. So the same in the Hermanus area, water running into Tobos Dam, which is a feeder area for that area. So we're using a lot, but we're also losing a lot just to pure runoff and into the water system. But, you know, the rain falling in the mountainous areas do end up in our rivers, do end up in our dams. So up to now, it's been good. We haven't had damage from it, so let's hope it stays that way.
Reinhard Feldenaes, thank you so much for joining me, Emergency Services Manager at Overberg District Municipality.